Good. How about you? How
are... I'm great, thanks.
Welcome to Dominion Live Chicago.
Hey, it's great to be here. We had a beautiful day in Chicago, too, today.
Kirk, you're involved with CelebrateCalm.com. Could you tell us a little bit about the organization?
Yeah. Right. We started this about 10 years ago, working with really intense kids. So kids who are very intense emotionally, intense behaviorally, very creative kids. And we started inviting these kids into our home so we could help them with social skills, help them with coping skills. And over the years, we just developed this methodology around being calm. And it really took off because the principles that we use are extremely powerful, and they work with kids, they work with adults, they work in everyday life. And so now what this has grown into is an organization which we travel across the country giving workshops. We train teachers, we train parents, we work directly with kids. We are behavioral consultants to some of the largest school districts in the country. And so it's a great thing because we have an opportunity to really impact people's lives by helping them be more calm, whether they're at home, in the classroom, in the business world, wherever.
How did you get involved with this?
Personal experience with my own son, who's a very intense kid, and no surprise, I'm kind of a very intense person, and I saw the need for a really positive approach to working with these kids, because you know, as you can see in everyday life, kids who are wired a little bit differently, who are more intense, they tend to get labeled as bad kids. They tend to be labeled as kids having bad behavior, and they don't always fit into mainstream society. So they're often kind of left out on in the margins. And I wanted to be able to take those kids and show them that, hey, this intensity they have is not a bad thing, as long as they have it focused and they have vision and motivation and they have a purpose in life, they can use this intensity for really great things. It's just that if they don't know how to use that, it tends to be channeled in very negative ways.
Right, and the adults around them need to somewhat alter their way of handling them as far as not reacting to them, to approach them in a much more calmer way, correct?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, because picture this. Say your child is running into your house, and he's literally, physically, is on fire. Your first thought is, I've got to put that fire out. So I'm going to cover him in a blanket, or I'm going to throw water on him. I'm going to put the fire out. But when our kids are emotionally on fire, what do we end up doing? We lecture them about, you know, you must have been playing with matches. And we kind of dump fuel on the fire, and we create even more intensity, and we create, as parents, a lot of the battles that we're in with these kids.
Right.
And
right.
So taking a calm approach does a couple things. One is it puts the fire out. It lets us talk. It lets us problem solve. It lets us get to consequences. And then it also models for our kids how to control their own emotions and how to calm themselves down.
Right. They kind of need a role model as far as that goes. And, of course, the parent or the adult around them should be the one to present that.
Oh, absolutely. And my experience is I am one of four boys of a career military father who is he's a colonel in the military. And so he used kind of that old model of fear and intimidation. And that's what I used on my son, who's now 15. I'm a self-confessed freak dad. He just used to blow up. Anytime he didn't do what I said, how I said it, when I said it, I would just blow up. And what I realized was I am modeling for him that if things don't go your way, you just get upset and yell, and that'll make things better. And obviously it doesn't work that way. And so one of the lies we've been told as parents is this. We've been told by our in-laws, you need to get better control of that kid. And we've been told that our job is to control our children. The problem with that is this. If I am controlling my child, then I'm taking responsibility for his behavior. I don't want to control my child. I want him to control himself. I want, and this is a very powerful concept, it's very simple, it's not easy, but it's simple. I want to control my own behavior, and I want my son to control his own behavior.
Right, because,
And what has happened in our house, and we've worked with thousands and thousands of families who have found this out, when the parent begins to first take control of their own anxiety and their own emotions and calms down, something really cool happens. The child then learns how to take responsibility for their own emotions and calm themselves down. But it doesn't start with controlling the child. It starts with controlling ourselves, because in the end, I am the only person in life that I can control. And that's a very powerful concept.
All right. I think maybe a lot of people most commonly would, you know, they don't have control over their, they react emotionally and don't understand or don't realize. And I'm, you know, after going to one of your workshops, I figured it out. I mean, I wasn't in control of my own emotions. I let others control my emotions without even realizing it until I heard you say, I don't know what exactly it was you said, per se, at one of the workshops. And once I was able to do that and have control over my emotions and not give control of my emotions to other people, if you follow.
The principle we use is this. If someone else can do something to you to push your buttons, if your kids are driving you crazy, even if something in society, say another driver, the economy, your politician that you wanted didn't win, if something can push you over the edge and can really throw you off emotionally, that person, that circumstance, has control and power over your emotions. And I think what you're saying is you learn to start looking at people, looking at circumstances in this way. In every circumstance, with every interaction, rather than letting that person or that circumstance control me, I'm going to control myself. And in doing so, I now have power over that situation. And so when I'm out driving in traffic, when I'm just, you know, I run a business, we've got an organization to run, so you always run into stress and struggles with that, dealing with a teenage son. My focus is not first on trying to control everyone else or everything else. It always comes to me first to say, what can I do in this situation to control myself first? Because once I control myself, now I can look at situations and people with a lot of clarity. And the situation, I can calm the situation down, I can problem solve, and it gives me, and I think this is what you found, it gives you an extraordinary amount of power in your life, which before, you know, most of us, especially as guys, were lacking.
Right, and then once you're able to do that, you're able to look forward to things in, you know, in a positive way. And you know, like you said, you have a teenage son. You probably didn't expect, well, you probably knew when they probably reached 11 or 12, their behavior would change, but not fully understanding why that is. I mean, you know, they're going through changes, but to understand the chemistry within the brain and how all of that works, it makes it a lot easier.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's interesting, too, Brian, because in surveys, if you ask teenagers what they want most from their parents, what they say is no drama. Because a teenager's life is nothing but drama. It's drama, and there's a lot of fear during the teenage years of, what am I going to do after high school? And what if I don't have a girlfriend? And what about my grades? And there's so much anxiety. The last thing parents who also are just filled with that anxiety and make a big deal out of everything.
Right.
And so I can just tell you, not only with my own son, but working, I do a lot of work with teenagers. It is so powerful when the parent can be that rock of stability that the kids need, because more than anything, kids need order and structure and stability. And when the adult in their life can provide that through their example, it settles the kids down, and it will settle even a teenager down more than kind of just inflaming the situation and having that constant kind of turmoil and drama in the house.
Right. Right. So you, how many of these workshops do you do in like a week's period of time? Because it seems like you do a lot. I get your newsletter.
We do too many. In March, I think we did 23 in the month of March, but it just depends. But, you know, I am really lucky because every month we probably do on average 10 to 15 workshops across the country. So every time I get in front of a group, I'm teaching the same thing, and it really gets deep down in you that being calm gives me power, and it helps me get to problem solving with my son, with my wife, just with people around me. And so, and we come to the Chicagoland area pretty often. We were in Aurora last night and yesterday. Tomorrow we're in Huntley, Illinois, which I think is a little bit northwest of the city, for a teacher workshop tomorrow, and then also a parents workshop as well.
And all of this, like you said, with not only you can apply all of this not only to your own kids or your cousins or your nieces or any other family member, but in within your relationships with adults as well. And I found it works with that as well.
It's changed my life, honestly. Not just working with kids, but we're in the process as a family. We're moving from the Washington D.C. area to Nashville, Tennessee. And so, you know, with moving, there are a lot of unknowns, and there's things that go wrong, and our closing was delayed. All of our stuff that was being moved was delayed, and there have been, you know, countless kind of hassles that have gone along with this. And in the, you know, the former freak dad that I used to be, I would have been calling people, yelling and screaming, why isn't closing happening, and you're costing me all this money, and, you know, all the screaming and constantly upset. Now, it's not that I let things go. Being calm doesn't mean I'm a doormat, and it doesn't mean I just let things happen. It just means I can approach people in a way that I can actually influence them better, that I can get things taken care of, and I can problem solve rather than just calling and berating someone and then just, you know, fuming all day to my wife about the injustice of it all. it's just, I become this rock of stability, and for me personally, it's really important because my son is watching everything I do, and because I watched everything my dad did. And so what I've seen is I've got an almost 16-year-old son who's driving now, who is living the teenage life, but he's doing it largely without the drama. And that's kind of a cool thing to see, you know, a teenager not being all, you know, dramatic and impulsive and really controlling himself. It's a really cool thing to see.
Yeah, you know, once they develop the responsibility, it's just going to help them later on in life as well in their adult life. And, you know, they can, of course, you know, transfer all that knowledge to their own kids and so on and so on. It's just a great thing.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Hey, can you explain a little bit? Earlier I mentioned about how the brain works and how that when they come to a certain age, you know, things start to speed up. It was that mentioned at your workshop, and it's also on like the YouTube on your front page of CelebrateCalm.com.
Yeah, there's a couple of things happening inside the kids' brains. I'm trying to make it kind of brief, but if you think about kids' brains as a little city, and there's traffic that runs through the city, and in your kids' brains, the traffic is, you know, the lectures we give them as parents, all the lessons they get at school, all the messages on TV and over the internet, all the sensory input. And in a lot of these kids' brains, especially when they get to the teenage years, and especially your intense kids, there's two things that happen that kind of impede this traffic in the brain. The first thing is there's this traffic signal in the brain. It's the neurotransmitters that are communicating with each other. But they don't always sync up. So it's kind of like the traffic signal. So anywhere in the Chicagoland area on a Friday night at rush hour, blinking yellow and not working. Well, you're going to get a big traffic jam. You're going to get frustration and chaos. And that happens in a lot of our kids' brains, and that's why they need so much, you know, order and stability and control and consistency. Now, the other thing that happens that's really interesting in a lot of these kids' brains, especially in the teenage years, is they've got, when this traffic signal isn't working, they call in a traffic cop to regulate the traffic in the brain. Well, the traffic cop in our kids' brains tends not to be fully awake. He's kind of asleep. And so when this happens, the brain is understimulated. And that's why you often hear, oh, wow, he's looking for some stimulation. That's why he likes to argue. That's why he's tapping his pencil. That's why he likes to always be moving or listening to music while he does his homework. Well, absolutely, that's because it stimulates the brain and actually helps it be, the brain be more attentive and more focused.
Yeah, it was, you know, it was interesting because one of the things you said, you mentioned the whole thing about arguing. My whole thing was my nieces and my cousins. You go, hey, how was your day? You know, and this, you know, this arguing, or they give you attitude and they talk back, and you didn't understand. Like, I didn't understand why. You know, all I did was ask how their day was. and now I totally get it. I just, you know, I'll ask the question, and all I expect back is the word fine. You know,
right. Yeah. Well, part of that is because we're relating to them kind of from our adult world reference, and when we ask how was your day, they're kind of interpreting it as how did you do in school today? Did you perform well?
Right.
And so they view it as like, hey, I've had enough pressure all day in class. Don't need any more, you know, from you. And so typically, at the end of the day, what I usually ask my son is, I don't ask him about school. The school is important to me. Homework is important to me. What's important to my son is music and his favorite band and guitars and playing in a blues club or, you know, his friends and what's going on. So I try to start with his world. And when, you know, here's a good one too, in the morning, rather than starting with all that anxiety, it's like, hey, you got to get up, you got to go to school. Well, to a kid, that's like a boss showing up at the door in the morning, pounding on the door saying, hey, come on, get ready for work, you got to get to the office right now. We wouldn't want our boss showing up at the door. So when I wake my son up in the morning, I don't start in immediately rushing him around to get to some place that he's not really excited about. I enter his world, and I ask him about something interesting to him that went on. Or I may even wake him up to a compliment of something that he did well the night before. And it sets an entirely different tone for the conversation than if I just come in with all my anxieties, like, so how are things going? How are you doing? Do you have any homework? Come on, get ready for school. You try something simple like that, and you find you start to eliminate a lot of battles that we kind of create ourselves just because of our own anxiety.
Right, and once you're able to identify what it is that sets them off, you're much able to manage it. You mean you're much easier. It's much easier just to avoid that.
Yeah.
And it worked. It's great. I mean, you're kind of an inspiration. That's for sure.
Well, I don't know if it's that. I think it's just giving, I appreciate that, but I think it's more just giving us tools because as parents, nobody really taught us how to be parents, and we just use that whole control your kid mentality, but there's a lot of downsides to that, and I'd rather have my child control himself. But, you know, a couple of things for anybody listening, very simple things that you can do tomorrow. When things start getting intense, sit down. It sounds very kind of stupid and simple. Yeah. If you sit down during an argument with a kid, it immediately changes the dynamic. Rather than getting up in their face and going at them, nothing good ever happens when you stand and go toe-to-toe with a teenager. It's just not going to end well because they're not going to back down. But when I sit down, I tend to draw kids into a conversation with me, and it kind of calms them down and just changes the whole dynamic of the conversation. So simple things like that. Sit down. You know, find something that's calming for you to do while your child's doing homework, when you think you're going to have this important discussion, do something that's kind of relaxing to you, because then that way your anxiety doesn't poison that interaction and your intensity doesn't add fuel to it. And you'll notice you're going to turn, we kind of say, you turn a confrontation into a conversation with your kid. And that's what we all want with our kids anyway.
Yeah, you were saying at one of the workshops, a good way to do it is to sit down and put your legs up, just kind of like look totally relaxed.
Yeah, do that with your wife, your spouse. It changes the dynamic. I've had numerous guys tell me that they use this now in the corporate world, where instead of going and standing over someone in their cubicle, which puts their employee in, kind of a defensive posture, invite them into their office and actually sit with their feet up or just sit kind of reclining back. And they said, I get so much more valuable input from my employees now, because I'm not getting this real confrontational type situation here. And again, let me reaffirm this. This is not about being weak. It's not being passive at all. You deal with the situations. You deal with them head on. But when you take this kind of tone, this kind of posture, you actually get the problem solving. You get the kids taking ownership for their own actions rather than just going in, screaming, yelling, telling them they've lost all their privileges, and then being in a fight all weekend. And you get to the real objective of what you want, but it's just getting there, in a different way.
I like your approach to, as the word grounding, to instead of grounding, give them a choice, as in, okay, here's your consequence. If you, let's say, you're driving along in a car and the kids are screaming in the background, you give them a consequence. Well, here's the choice. You can continue screaming and yelling as I'm driving. It's just driving me completely crazy. Or when you get home and your favorite TV show's on and, I'm just going to go grab a pan and a spoon. I'll just bang the pan during your TV show, and I'll do that for five times.
You can do some creative things. I like to teach kids eternal principles and sowing and reaping, because that's kind of built into nature. And you've touched on the right word, which you guys have a choice. You can do that if you want. I just want to let you know what the consequence is going to be. So you choose, because ultimately I want the kids making the choice. And I want them making the right choice. But at times, I want my son to make a bad choice, and I want him to experience the consequence while he's a kid, so he learns this is the way life works. But rather than me controlling the behavior, I really want them to control the behavior.
Right, for every consequence.
Then they own it.
Right, for every consequence, there's an action, but there's also a way out of, and then it would be to, of course, continue making the right choices and using the right judgment, which I think's probably pretty good.
Yeah. and then when they do make the good choice, it gives you an opportunity to praise them and say, dude, nice choice. See the difference. When you chose to control yourself, You experience this positive consequence, this reward, but if you continue to do X, you are going to continue to get Y consequence. So it's up to you. Because as teenagers, and this is hard, because our anxiety wants us to control our kids. Our anxiety forces us to control everything they do. But as a teenager, what I tell my son often is, it's your life. It's your decisions. And your decisions impact your life, not my life. Because I make my own decisions, and I'm going to make good decisions. And you're going to make your decisions, too. And you know what it really does, Brian, which is really powerful for a teenager? It shows them that you trust them. And I know with a lot of our kids, they've done things and made us believe we can't trust them.
Yeah.
But as you can let go of it some and say, you know what, you're a smart kid, I trust you to make the right choice, because guess what? You have to live with that choice, and it's your life, not my life. And you know what's really interesting? As soon as you start doing that, the kids really get a hold of that, and they sense that, yeah, they trust me to do it, and I'm responsible for my behavior. My parents are not going to bail me out. Neither is my parent going to, jump down my throat at this. I own this decision. And our kids and teenagers are capable of a lot more than we expect of them. We've kind of babied them in society now, and we've kind of handicapped them by trying to control them too much rather than giving them some tools to be successful. So, again, not easy to do, but extremely important if you want to raise a child who's responsible for themselves and actually leaves your home before they're 30 years old.
Yeah. Yeah, you had a good one as well. One tool for a parent to teach their kids as far as controlling themselves and their behavior and their actions was to use the word opposites, as in, if you if you keep nagging or asking the same question and keep acting in an inappropriate manner, you're going to get just the opposite of whatever attention it is that you want. I like that.
Absolutely. Yeah, we try to come up with things that are very practical, but that also use as little talking as possible. Because you've probably seen it with your kids, and you know, other parents have seen with their kids. When you talk a lot, it tends to make the kids more angry, and it tends not to get anything done. So I do like things like just saying the word, hey, opposites, and that's my clue to say, nag, whine, complain, all you want. I'm just letting you know, the more you complain, you're just going to get the opposite of what you're asking for, because your manipulation doesn't move me. So if you can, you kind of hear this, it comes back to that same idea of, I am a rock of stability in your life. My yes means yes. My no means no. You can't change my opinion. If you throw the worst tantrum in the world, you're not getting what you want. And if you call me all kinds of names, I'm not going to change my mind. And if you say I'm the worst parent in the world, it's not going to change my mind, because I don't look to a 4-year-old or a 14-year-old for my validation as a parent. So add at it if you want, but it's just a waste of time. And, you know, for a lot of our kids, as soon as they find out that we are this kind of immovable wall and we're a rock of stability that they can't push over the edge, that they can't drive crazy, then they start to get in their heads, oh, not worth my time trying to push mom's buttons because I can't move her.
I actually use that one myself every time. Lately, ever since I went to your workshop, I every time someone comes along to try and, you know, upset me or get me angry or something, I'll just say, I am a rock who cannot be moved.
And they probably look at you a little bit strange.
Yeah, right. They do, but I don't care because it works for me. It keeps me calm.
Yeah. So we teach kids same kind of principle, but some of the language is kind of similar to that. We'll just say, hey, you're not taking power away from me. I'm not giving power over my actions, my moods, my behavior, my choice. I'm not giving that power over to you, because that's a different way of kind of approaching peer pressure. Instead of just saying, okay, don't give in to peer pressure, it's really what we're saying is, don't give another kid power over your choices and your emotions and how you feel about yourself, because otherwise, you become their puppet.
Right.
We put it in those terms to kids, they're like, oh, I am nobody's puppet. And you know, we tell parents that. If your child can push your buttons, you are their puppet, and they are just manipulating and controlling you, and they're not equipped to do it. So that power language is also, it's really good language to use with the kids, and also just, you know, in your own life to think of it that way.
That's some great advice, because peer pressure in a teenager's life is pretty much like about 70% of their world, if in my opinion.
Yeah, and when they get it, see, it's interesting. When we do the team assemblies at schools, they really get that concept. They've heard peer pressure a million times, and so it's become kind of meaningless.
Right. What does it mean exactly? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, but now it's like, oh, yeah, peer pressure. But when it's put in terms of, oh, so you let your friends make decisions for you, and when they hear it like that, they're like, no, nobody makes decisions for me. Well, yeah, they do, because they just chose your friends. They're choosing who. They're choosing who you're nice to. They're choosing whether you do drugs, whether you drink, whether you do. Your friends are choosing that for you, and you're just their puppet. You're powerless. And it kind of irritates and irks them enough that they say, oh, you know what? I'm not giving that power to another zit-faced kid in my class. And we use that, honestly, we use that for, you know, teenage girls saying, don't give power over your body to some teenage kid that you're not going to know in another year. You know, don't give them power to manipulate you like that. And when they see it in that, in those terms, it really connects with them. So very, very good language to use.
So if anyone needed to get a, if any parent out there or family member of a cousin or niece or something like that, if they needed to get in contact with you, they had questions, how would they do that?
Okay, two easy ways. The easiest way is to go to the website. It's easy. It's celebratecalm.com. So celebrate and then CALM.com. My email address is Kirk, KIRK, at celebratecalm.com. But if you go to the website, there's links there, some helpful videos there. We've got some Q&As, some past newsletters. We've got a free newsletter that we send out once or twice a week that we try to make really practical. It's all free. If you have questions, feel free to write. We'll keep you updated when we're back in the area, because we do a lot of free workshops around the Chicagoland area and across the country. So we'd love to see, you know, everybody, if they can make it out to one of the workshops there. I think you found they're a lot of fun too. So
yeah, they are.
We have a good time, but we try to equip parents with real practical tools.
I have one of your box sets. I got one of those. They're great. They're like the what they like. 10 discs or 11? 9 or 10, I think. I can't remember.
No, we're up to 15 disc CDs. So, Brian, remind me. I will send you. We've got a new one, and I'll send this to you. It's one on Stopping Defiance and Disrespect. And there's a special CD in there just for dads.
Oh, okay.
We as dads sometimes struggle a little bit more just because of the way we were raised and doing things. But just remind me. I'll send that off to you. But it's one of my favorite things we've done. So, but, yeah, just... You know, anybody out there, just click on over, easy link to sign up for the newsletter. Let us know that you heard us on Brian's show, because Brian's kind of a real special guy, and we'd like to get to know you a little bit better. So,
okay, cool. Thank you very much. You're welcome back anytime, and if you have any updates, you know, feel free to let me know, and I'll have you back on.
Okay, perfect. Brian, thank you so much for what you're doing. I appreciate it.
Oh, hey, can you say, this is Kirk Martin of CelebrateCalm.com, and you're listening to Dominion Live Chicago?
Hey, this is Kirk Martin with CelebrateCalm.com, and you're listening to DominionLiveChicago.com.
All right, thank you very much, Kirk.
Okay, take care. We'll see you later.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, Dominion Live Chicago. Let's get some music here. Da, 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 da. Let's see if we got... There we go. All right, we're going to get back in the mode. That was I liked that interview. That was decent. Thank you, Kurt, for being on, and I'll keep in contact. I'm going to take a little bit of a break. Let me give out the phone line here. If you guys want to get in contact to Dominion Live Chicago, you got a story or something you want to tell, dial it up. It's phone number is... Oh, I can't even remember the phone number. Hold on. Woo. Brian. 888-668-0742. Give it a call. I'm going to take a break, and we'll be back. this, man. I'll be right back. I promise. Test to see if this will repeat or not. We're going to go to the next track.